You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 5th of January 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, one of the encouraging things last year was the number of people that are now speaking up about anti-white policies within the system. And today I want to talk about one of those people, a professor at Harvard who has just retired, and he left a very interesting letter behind with his retirement notification. And I'm taking this article from Breitbart. It's headlined, Professor Blasts Harvard for Anti-White, Anti-Male Rules in Retirement Message. A Harvard professor who spent 40 years teaching at the Ivy League institution blasted the university for the changes it made after the Chinese coronavirus and George Floyd riots, citing woke, anti-white and anti-male resolutions in a searing essay announcing his retirement. It's quite interesting that just to remember what happened with Black Lives Matter and all this craziness about George Floyd, who actually died of a drug overdose, but because of all the pressure that was actually put on the jury in the court, they ignored the fact that he died of a drug overdose, and they found the police officer guilty of killing him, despite the fact that before the police officer put his knee on his neck, he was calling for his mother and asking to be let out outside the car so that he could just lie down there on the ground. He was quite clearly already having an overdose before that happened. But if you compare what was the result of that, which was everybody getting down on one knee, from police to politicians to school teachers, insisting that the whole school of primary school children take a knee in assembly, and you compare that craziness back then with what we have today with the diversity, equity and inclusion programs being stopped in America by Donald Trump. That's quite a change to go from one mode of thinking in society to the complete opposite. And the result of those George Floyd riots and Black Lives Matter was that there was a big push for more inclusion everywhere. And we also saw the damaging of statues that went along with this rioting, the lynching of the Edward Colston statue in Bristol, and again a jury finding that the people that lynched the statue were not guilty of criminal damage, even though quite clearly they were guilty of it. But because everybody thought that this was a righteous cause to attack the former slave owner, they were found not guilty. And obviously, alongside all of this, there were policies put in place in the universities that penalised white people, and particularly white men. Professor James Hankins explained that his decision to retire was not a sudden one and was made in the fall of 2021, after having endured almost 2 years of Harvard's rules related to the coronavirus, which he called tyrannous invasions of private life. Not surprised he wrote tyrannous. I mean, surely that would be tyrannical, not tyrannous. You don't need to invent a new word to describe this. And also, that was a pretty crazy time as well. At the same time as George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, or rather just before that, we had all these coronavirus restrictions where people weren't allowed out of their houses. And yet, as soon as it was Black Lives Matter that were going out of their houses and protesting, well, that was okay. And the police were getting down on one knee and not criticizing them for going out, because they said, oh, well, it's a just cause, this. It's anti-racist. That's why they're coming out and breaking these coronavirus restrictions. Whereas when white people came out to protest the actual restrictions themselves, then they came down on them like a ton of bricks. And we saw lots of arrests and lots of violence as well, particularly when white people came out to protect the statues from being damaged by Black Lives Matter. Again, we saw lots of arrests of white people. So, I mean, just looking back then, it shows you that we have a two-tier system of justice, where if you're white and you're protesting what's seen as a right-wing cause, then the establishment will come down on you extremely harshly. And if you're black and you're protesting so-called racism, then you'll just be let off. The history professor added that his decision to leave the Ivy League school also came after it had collectively taken a knee in response to the George Floyd riots, which he said had serious consequences for the way Harvard conducted its graduate admissions process moving forwards. So what are these institutions doing, taking a political stance? Because Black Lives Matter was a political activism group. I mean, they had political policies that they wanted to achieve. So for all of these universities to start going along with this, it shows that they have a political bias. And some of the policies of Black Lives Matter were really quite extreme, saying that they wanted to just get rid of all the police. I can remember doing a podcast with Grandpa Dan at the time, and we looked at a survey that was done of black people, and they wanted more police in their communities because they felt safer with more police in their communities. So it was mainly the white supporters of Black Lives Matter that wanted to get the police out of the black communities, because the problem is, black people have the same problem with crime that white people have. It's just that there are more black people that are involved in violent crime by percentage of the population than white people. But that doesn't mean it's all black people. There's also a large amount of black people that are the victims of crime. They don't want to be the victims of crime. They would rather have the police there. But it seems white people look at it and they say, oh, well, the police are just racist, and they just kill black people for no reason. Of course, the usual reason is that the black person is resisting arrest. And in a country where the police officers have guns, that's really not a very good idea. In reviewing graduate student applicants in the fall of 2020, I came across an outstanding prospect who was a perfect fit for our program, Hankins wrote in his essay, titled Why I'm Leaving Harvard, published in Compact magazine on Monday. In past years, this candidate would have risen immediately to the top of the applicant pool, the professor continued. In 2021, however, I was told informally by a member of the admissions committee that, meaning admitting a white male, was not happening this year. So that's really quite blatant, isn't it? That's quite obvious discrimination on the basis of race against white people. And this is the problem with these initiatives. I mean, the motive there is to get more representation for black and minority ethnics in employment positions. But the fact of the matter is that they have a lower average IQ than white people. So there aren't going to be as many of them that are actually qualified for the top positions. So if you might have, say, 10 white people that might be qualified for a particular position, there might only be one black person that is qualified for that position, which is the reason why you would only find, say, 1 in 10 of the people in that job role were actually black. If you then try to make it so that, let's make it even, 5 out of these job positions are black and 5 white, the only way you can do that is to lower the standards, to get more black people in and to discriminate against white people, to get them out, which is exactly what these diversity, equity and inclusion policies do. And what you end up with then, you end up with people in important positions doing very, very important jobs. And if they're not actually qualified, if they're not actually any good at the job, then it can become very, very dangerous. You think if you have somebody who's not properly qualified that is involved in engineering projects and the sort of damage that that could cause, you have somebody perhaps that cuts corners when they're designing a bridge and the bridge collapses and the cars all collapse. Perhaps you have somebody working in airline traffic and they're not qualified and they make a mistake with the airline traffic and you end up with airplanes crashing, which is what happened last year, didn't it? We had a helicopter, I think, crash into a bridge. And we also had some other airplane crashes at the same time. And Donald Trump said that this was down to the diversity policy of air traffic control. And if you had a look on their website, they were talking about how proud they are to have these diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, which effectively means that they're putting people into these positions who aren't qualified for the job. And the end result is you end up with things like airline crashes. So this is what this professor here is concerned about. He's putting forward someone who is eminently qualified for the role, and he's being told, well, we can't have them for the role because they're white. And that is blatant discrimination against white people in white countries as well. This is the staggering thing about all of this. This DEI is taking place in countries where the people that built the country are white, and it's supposed to be our country. Hankins then cited another example in which a certifiably brilliant student, whom he asserted was literally the best at the university, who, quote, won the prize for the graduating senior with the best overall academic record, close quote, was rejected from all the graduate programs to which he applied. He, too, was a white male, the professor wrote, adding, I called around to friends at several universities to find out why on earth he had been rejected. So perhaps in that instance he wasn't directly told that the reason why he was rejected is because he was white. But he's already been told that white people will not be promoted that year because of Black Lives Matter and because of George Floyd. So you literally got the best person at the university who has won prizes for his academic record, and he's being rejected from all the graduate programs which he applied to. And clearly you want people on these programs who are going to be very good at what they do, because they're also going to be able to help out the others on the program. If you don't have people, I mean, that's this argument as to why in America they had Brown versus Board of Education, and they wanted to put black pupils into the white schools because up to that point you had segregation. And they said, well, clearly we have to have black people sat next to the white pupils because the white pupils get so much higher marks and they'll be able to help the black pupils. And that was the logic for why you have to have mixed schools. So what they're saying here is, well, no, we don't even want that anymore. We don't want the white pupils or the white students who are very good academically sat next to the black students who aren't so good. We just want to fill it up with black students who aren't so good. And the whole idea of this diversity, inclusion and equity is so illogical. It's quite amazing that it actually managed to take off. Everywhere it was the same story. Graduate admissions committees around the country had been following the same unspoken protocol as ours, he continued. The one exception I found to the general exclusion of white males had begun life as a female. In other words, a woman pretending to be a white man was the only acceptable white male applicant in the eyes of woke universities. And I think he's being truthful there rather than just generalising. He's saying that the only exception he found was this transgender. So all the white males were being excluded. Hankins also noted that Harvard's two-book standard, requiring faculty to publish at least two books to prove expertise in a subject area, was axed in the late 1990s due to feminist activists who demanded that half of all new appointments at the university be women. So in order to actually be a teacher at the university, you have to have had at least two books published. And apparently these women, not so many of them have got books published. And that was the reason why there weren't so many women at the university. So in order to achieve equality, it was required that standards be lowered, the professor explained, noting that women previously made up less than 10% of PhDs in history. So we also hear about them lowering standards in maths so that they can get more women in. I can recall doing a podcast, I think again, with Grandpa Dan some years back about how female students were not required to get the same marks in the exams as male students in order to get into university. And black students were being allowed more time at the exam and also being given extra tuition. So this is hardly a level playing field. Also, when you think about it, they're actually penalising the people that are most likely to achieve. If you've got white males, for instance, and they have an average IQ of 100, and you have black Africans who have an average IQ of 70, and that's being generous, and you then take the resources away from the white students with the 100 IQ, and you give them to the students with the 70 IQ, what you're actually doing is you are preventing the people most likely to succeed from succeeding. And you are giving all the resources to the group least likely to succeed, least likely to excel, perhaps I should say. It's white men who excel at things. We produce the geniuses. There aren't very many black geniuses, and there aren't very many female geniuses either. So if you take the resources away from the people that are, that if they get given the resources, they're most likely to come out with fantastic new inventions, you're not going to end up with lots of fantastic new inventions, are you? You're just going to end up with mediocrity. As I say, it isn't just between race or whites and blacks. It's also between men and women. Men have a higher IQs than women. And what I mean by that is we both have the same average IQ, but at the top end of the scale, there will be much more males that have extremely high IQs, enough to be geniuses, than women, which is why you don't get female geniuses. Feminists denied vociferously that this was happening, he said. The real problem, they said, was the inability of men properly to value female scholarship. I don't understand that, because what are they saying? That it wasn't the fact that the women actually hadn't published these theses. It was the fact that men just didn't recognise them. Well, if you want to be recognised, you have to have papers published, don't you? You have to have peer-reviewed papers published. What they were saying here is you had to have two books published. I guess they could be saying that the book publishers were prejudiced against them, but surely if their work was that good, they could just go to another book publisher and they would publish it, or they could self-publish. So it's not that men don't value female scholarship, it's that there isn't enough female scholarship of a high enough standard for there to be 50% females in the faculty. Hankins added that he and others who opposed the new requirement were deemed sexist. So when you say you should have to have the qualifications before you get given the position, that's now considered being discriminatory against women. They probably say the same, that it was being racist to say that even if you're black, you have to have the same qualification standards as whites. Soon the department was promoting an ever higher percentage of junior faculty, the professor said. The dynamic was similar to Congress voting to restrain its own spending. Changes at Harvard, Hankins said, are part of the reason why the younger generation finds itself in a state of moral and intellectual disorientation. And I'm sure they do find it very disorientating, because on the one hand, you're being told that if you do well, you'll be rewarded. And on the other hand, that you're being told that if you do well and you're white, you're just going to be penalised anyway because of race. And you're also being told that at the same time as being told that you're not supposed to see race and you're not supposed to see any difference between white people and black people. Yet at the same time as that, you're being told that you need to make exceptions for black people and you need to make exceptions for women in order to achieve equality. And equality is not something that exists in nature. Everything is unequal. Even amongst equal groups, there is always a hierarchy with one at the top and others at the bottom. That's just a part of nature. Things are unequal and you have to have hierarchies. You can't just have everything horizontal. Nothing would function that way. When late liberal pedagogy replaced Western civilization courses with global history, serious harm was done to the socialization of young Americans, he added. When you don't teach the young what civilization is, it turns out that people become uncivilized. And this is because they're trying to place equal value on different cultures and different societies. So they're saying, well, you can't just study white history all the time. You have to study these other groups. But these other groups may not have developed civilization, so they may not have as much history in the first place. And this is part of this problem with globalization and multiculturalism. We end up placing these value judgments on these other cultures, whether we like it or not. Even when we're trying our hardest to be unracist, we're still placing value judgments. We're still saying, well, they're not actually good enough at doing these positions, so we have to give them a leg up. We have to allow them in simply because they're black or simply because they're women, even though they haven't got the qualifications, which is really quite insulting, I would say. And of course, they get around that by saying, well, it's because the only reason they don't have these positions is because of bias, because there's an unconscious bias. But it's not an unconscious bias that's responsible for the discrepancy between the qualifications, is it? You know, it's not unconscious bias that puts somebody in the position and on the graduate course because they've got the best academic achievement. I mean, what they're saying there is, well, this academic achievement is weighted to people in the West that can study and do these exams, and perhaps these other people aren't so good at that. So again, they're saying perhaps these people aren't so good at that, that they think about things in a different manner. Basically, the multiculturalism just ends up in absolute chaos. You're so much better off just with a ethnically homogenous group that can study its own history rather than arguing about whose history they're going to be studying. And this, these anti-white policies, they don't just run all the way through university now. And we have another article here that I want to fit in. A music festival that bans white people from running it rakes in thousands in taxpayer cash. So because they ban white people from having anything to do with this festival, they get rewarded for it. It's the same in the universities. They'll be rewarded with funding for having these diversity, inclusion and equity policies. They'll be rewarded with funding for that. The festival and its organisers have hoovered up more than £30,000 in public funding. Now, who in their right mind in Africa would fund a festival that specifically didn't want Africans in it? Do you think the African government would then be sending funding to it? You think the Japanese government would be giving funding to a festival in Japan that explicitly said we don't want any Japanese there? It's only white people that do these silly things. A music festival that bars white people from running it has received thousands of pounds of taxpayer money. Decolonize Fest, an annual punk event aimed at punks of colour, has been backed by government grants. Punks of colour, you know, this is a weird thing as well. Punk was always very white. Blacks had reggae. That's what they had. And the white males, the white youth, they had punk, very different styles of music. The London-based festival states that white people cannot join the organising group that controls it. So they're explicitly having a racist policy, really, aren't they? Imagine if Patriotic Alternative was to set up a festival and say black people explicitly cannot join the organising group. Do you think that the British government would give them any money towards it? I think the British government would be sending the police around there to arrest them, wouldn't they? Leadership positions are reserved for those with at least one parent descended from, quote, original inhabitants of non-European continents or from Roma and traveller communities. Imagine you put that round the other way and said, we're going to have a festival and the organisers have to be the original inhabitants of Britain. They'd be saying, what original inhabitants? There aren't any original inhabitants. Britain was filled with immigrants. Well, Britain was always peopled by people from closely related brother nations up until about 50 years ago. You can't claim the Saxons and the Norse and the Normans and the Belgae and the Iceni. You can't claim that they were different races. They were all brother nations. They were all essentially part of European nations, which originated in white people and earlier nations in the Near East. So you can't say that just because there's been migration into Britain by, in fact, it wasn't even migration, it was pioneers back then, that that means that Britain should accept multiculturalism now. The event's stated mission is to undo colonial harms and dismantle white supremacy within the punk music scene. And I don't think punk has ever been really associated with white supremacy. What they mean by that is let's just remove all the white people from this. And again, you wouldn't be able to have a festival if you said you wanted to remove black people from it. You would be arrested. Arts Council funding has supported the festival, whose organisers have pledged to put the threat back into punk. Well, it's hardly threatening, is it, if the government are backing it and the Arts Council are backing it, if it's promoting government policy, which is diversity, inclusion and equity. We have the Human Rights Act that Tony Blair brought in, which means that every organisation in the country has to be seen to be promoting diversity in some way. The Arts Council provided £7,793 in COVID emergency funding to keep the festival running during the pandemic, the Telegraph revealed last night, and a further £18,000 in national lottery money was granted this year, that's the year 2025. Festival organiser Bipasha Ahmed, that's a nice Anglo-Saxon name, received up to £3,500 in 2024 for growing Decolonised Fest through training, a mentorship and partnerships. This grant came from the PRS Foundation, the UK's leading charitable funder of music talent development. So the money for musical talent is going to a group that explicitly bans white people from taking part in organising it. The PRS Foundation receives backing from the Department for Culture, Media and Sport. In total, public funding for the festival and its organiser has exceeded £30,000. The festival also bans rhetoric that could be considered fat phobia. So it doesn't want people to be concerned about their health and concerned about the obesity epidemic there either. Its manifesto declares, "We are asserting our place in punk and want to showcase the amazing creative and talented contributions punks of colour have made to the punk scene since its inception." Well, I don't think punks ever thought of themselves as punks of colour. If there were punks that were involved in it that weren't white, I think they just saw themselves primarily as punk more than anything else. I mean, that seems to be the thing with music scenes. In youth, you identify with the music that you're a part of, or at least it used to be that way in the 90s and before then. Not quite sure how things go now when we have such a wide plethora of different styles of music and there isn't so much unanimity of things that there used to be. I mean, it used to be that everybody used to watch the same TV programs because he only had such a small sample to make our choice from. And it was the same with music. We had a few music magazines that would tell us what sort of music to listen to and you had to go out and buy the records, whereas now you've just got literally millions of different artists that are putting out their own music. So I'm not quite sure we even have these youth groups that we used to have, like punks and rockers and ravers and all that sort of thing. But back then, people used to primarily identify with the music scene that they were a part of. As I say, I'm not sure what they identify with now. We are uncompromising and strong, and we'll dismantle the white supremacy, patriarchy, classism, ableism and Islamophobia that infests the punk scene. You're not interested in fighting against the anti-white behaviour in the punk scene, such as by Bob Villain, who sings about how much he hates white people. Organisers say they are rewriting the rules and truly putting the threat back into punk again. The festival will talk about racism, but not in a way that centres whiteness or prioritises the feelings of white people. No white tears, so they're going to be as insulting as they can possibly be towards white people. Again, if you put the boot on the other foot, imagine you said you're going to talk about black people in a way that doesn't prioritise their feelings and you don't really care if there's any black tears. I mean, you'd be told that you were inciting hate there. I would have thought that was threatening to make black people cry. While white allies are welcome, they are reminded that the event will focus on people of colour. So it's completely segregated. Decolonise Fest was established in 2016 as a DIY punk collective. 2 years later, it released a documentary explaining its purpose. In the film, one contributor said it can be a bit isolating sometimes going to gigs and being surrounded by white people and looking on stage and seeing only white people. Well, punk music was developed and created by white people, wasn't it? That's why white people listen to it. The festival has previously hosted Bob Villain, whose frontman led chants of death to the IDF at Glastonbury last summer. And he also has talked about how much he hates white people and made songs of extremely anti-white and anti-Britain music. Decolonise Fest supported that performance on social media with the message, free Palestine and up the Villain. And, you know, this is the really bizarre thing. These people will think that they are actually fighting against the system and they're putting the threat back into punk. But they're the ones that are actually receiving funding from the system. They're getting £30,000 from the system. So clearly the system approves of something that they're doing. And I would say what it approves of, it might not approve of the Free Palestine stuff, but it certainly approves of all the anti-white stuff that goes with this, just the same as Harvard University approved of all the anti-white stuff that we were talking about in this earlier news article today. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.